everyone. Good evening. Hope everyone's doing okay. Nice to see everyone's faces. All right. We're moving on to the next sugya. And I'm not going to say too much about it. It's long. And we will hopefully get through the full arc of it tonight. But we'll need to do a little bit of cleanup work, I suspect, next week as well, to just fully put together what's happened here, both in terms of some of the meaning and some of the structure. But I think it'll be great if in this session we can get through the full arc of the actual sugya. So this sugya basically goes a full daf. We're going to span three different amudim. Here we are at the beginning of a new section. All right, we're starting here with a conversation that seems to open in the middle of nowhere. And we'll come back to kind of why that's happening, or maybe we'll run with it a little and you'll see when you figure out why it's happening. You'll remember last time we were having a conversation about the timing of starting and continuing a capital case. And the question was, why can't you start on Friday? What's the problem, right? What's the limit and all the different configurations that made it seem like it was just not possible to do that, including many of them that had to do with Shabbat. All right, so here we go. We're starting with a new piece. Amar le Reish Lakish le Rabbi Yochanan, utehe kevurat meit mitzvah, docha Shabbat mikal vachomer. So Reish Lakish wants to argue syllogistically to Rabbi Yochanan that the burial of a meit mitzvah, of an obligatory corpse, but what it basically means is a corpse that is unattended, that has no one who is dealing with it, that has no close relatives, that has no one who is putting aside their obligations to take care of it. That act of burying such an unattended body, Reish Lakish wants to claim, should supersede even Shabbat. This is not the case. Certainly, it's what Reish Lakish assumes is not the case. But he's either actively arguing that it should be the case, or is potentially in a reductio ad absurdum fashion saying, given the other facts that I know, this should follow, and yet I know it doesn't follow, so where have I gone wrong? I'd say it's not totally clear which direction Reish Lakish is going on that. But the argument is, shouldn't the burial of a meit mitzvah, an unattended body, which anyone, as we'll see in a moment, anyone is obligated to bury, shouldn't that also supersede Shabbat by a simple kal vachomer? Here's the kal vachomer, the syllogistic argument. Uma avoda shedocha Shabbat, kvurat meit mitzvah docha ota mi vela'achoto. I'm going to skip forward here. Let's get to the end of the flow and then fill in what happens. All right, so just reading this again. Ma avoda shedocha Shabbat, kvurat meit mitzvah docha ota mi vela'achoto. Continues the argument. Shabbat shenidchet mipnei avoda, eino din shetei kvurat meit mitzvah docha ota. All right, those are really the two parts. Let's understand them, and then we'll read the part of the Gemara in the middle, but I want to make sure we just have this logic straight. We're jumping between pages here. Says Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, Avodah, the temple service, supersedes Shabbat. Avodah is docha Shabbat in two ways. The Olat HaTamid, the continual offering that comes every morning and every afternoon, is also offered on Shabbat. Al Olat HaTamid yaseh v'nisko. And the Musaf offering on Shabbat, Uviyama Shabbat Shnechvasim B'nei Shana Tmimim. Those are both things that are normally melacha, slaughtering an animal, taking the blood out of it, all the other things that are involved, burning it on the Mizbeach. All of that temple stuff is allowed on Shabbat and supersedes the normal rules of Shabbat. If the temple supersedes Shabbat, and yet, okay, we know that burying a meit mitzvah, burying an unattended corpse supersedes the avodah, supersedes the temple service. So we'll get to that in 1 second, how we know that. If that's the case, well then certainly Shabbat shenidchet mipnei avodah ein odin shetehei kvurat mit mitzvah docha ota. If Shabbat is itself lower on the totem pole than avodah, okay, it is of a less importance than the temple service because you perform Shabbat violative activities in the temple service on Shabbat. So shouldn't it certainly be then that burying a mate mitzvah, which trumps avodah, should trump Shabbat, which is trumped by avodah? Right? It's a very simple kind of argument. Basically, we know mate mitzvah is sort of A, which ranks above avodah, which is B. And once we know that B, which is the avodah, is ranked above C, which is Shabbat, so we can conclude transitively that A must be above C, and that means mate mitzvah must trump Shabbat. Okay, let's go back and now just get where we're deriving this from and fill it in. So Amar Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, Utehei Kvurat Meit Mitzvah Docha Shabbat Mikal Lachomer, Uma Avodah Shadocha Shabbat Kvurat Meit Mitzvah Docha Ota Mi Vila Achoto. From the word Vila Achoto. So this is coming from Psukim about the Nazir, who takes on these optional kind of restrictions, including not defiling him or herself to the dead. It says in the parasha of the Nazir, Ko yemei aziro l'adonai al nefesh meit lo yavo. For all the days of the Nazirite vow, the Nazir should not come in contact with the dead. And then the pasuk plays out, La'aviv le'imo, le'achiv u'le'achoto, lo yitama lahem b'motam. Ki nezer elohav al rosho. Now what's the plain sense of this verse? The plain sense is, Even to the father and the mother, the brother and the sister, the Nazir does not become defiled. Meaning when I say, don't defile yourself to the dead, I mean even to your closest relatives. That's the plain sense of what the Torah is saying. But read midrashically, you can read the words la'aviv u'le'imo la'achiv u'le'achoto as superfluous. Because after all, the Torah already said, al nefesh meit lo yavo. A person should not come in contact with a corpse, so that includes any corpse. And then the Midrash is able to read la'aviv u'le'imo la'achiv u'le'achoto in a limited fashion, which is to say, don't come in contact with a corpse, meaning to your father, to your mother, to your brother, to your sister, but potentially implying that there are people outside of that set of relatives who you do defile yourself to. In particular, the Midrash is going to use this as the basis for the obligation of meit mitzvah, the obligation of burying an unattended corpse, to be universal. That it's a universal obligation that applies even to people who are unable to bury their own relatives. I put here in the document, for those who want to see it, the original drasha in the Sifrei, which our sugya is based on, but we're going to go back to what we have here and look at Rashi for our purposes. So how do we know that burying an unattended body supersedes the avodah, the temple service, from Vila Achoto, okay? Now, let's go to Rashi. Rashi's going to fill in sort of the first piece of this drasha, which is going to help us understand kind of what the last piece is doing. Vila achoto, ma talmud lomar. Gabei nazir, k'tiv al nefesh meit lo yavo. With respect to a nazir, it says, don't come in contact to a corpse. Uchtiv batrei la'aviv u'le'im o la'achiv la'achoto. And afterwards it says, to your father, your mother, your brother, and your sister. V'chul ho yatire ninhu. All of those are superfluous. Deha mikol nafshot or me'al nefesh meit mishtamea. You could derive all of those points from al nefesh meit lo yavo. Okay? There's nothing particularly added about that. They must be coming to add something else. Vidarshinan lahoba sifre. And in the sifre, there is a full midrash here, which Rashi is going to give you a couple tiny pieces of right now. Okay. What does he say? Aviv, matalmud lomar. What is the term his father come to add? Haloba ela leotzi meit mitzvah. Shemutar litamelo. How does the midrash read Aviv? Yeah, don't come in contact with any dead body. Like your father. Not even your father, but like your father. Meaning, oh, someone who is lying, a corpse that's lying by the side of the road with no one to take care of it. No, 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 no. The mitzvah of Nazir is never going that far to wipe out that that obligation. As a side point, this I think is one of the very striking Midrashei Halacha where it's very clear they have not just an idea, but actually already a principle, even a practice that they take for granted. It is just obvious that, of course, if you see a body by the side of the road, I don't care if you're the Kohen Gadol, you have to bury that. That's not what the sort of sanctity legislation was ever meant to do. And then this is sort of fitting it into to the words of the Torah, but I want to emphasize it's also good reading, right? That is to say, it's sensitive to the fact that the word la'aviv, whenever you have a term like that, it can be read as going to sort of the extreme, afilu aviv, but it can also potentially be read as I'm pointing out a sort of a limiting factor of the law. All right, and then the rest of the midrash goes, as you might expect at this point, to narrow it further. So le'imo matalmud lomar, fine, you got me meit mitzvah for the nazir. So what do I need le'imo? Le'gufelo itzterich. I don't need it to tell you about your mother, because that's already covered by don't come in contact with a corpse. Ulatir meit mitzvah ha'me'aviv nafka. And it can't be teaching you got to bury an unattended body, because we took care of that with the word aviv. Ela le'avi she'im ayazen nazir kohen. De'yesh alav shtei k'dushot. So what Imo adds is, yeah, even if you're a Nazir who's a Kohen, and then you might think, well, I'm twice forbidden from burying bodies, so I must be exempt from this. No, no, no. You are not exempt from this either. It applies to you as well. All right? Can you guess what's next? L'achiv matalmud lomar. So what does brother add? She'im ayazen nazir kohen gadol. If it's a kohen gadol, a high priest who also took a Nazirite vow, dekedushato chamura, who has the highest level of personal sanctity you could possibly imagine, she'af belo nazirut asur lita mele krovim, because a kohen gadol is not allowed to bury parents and siblings and closest relatives. So even without the Nazirut, and then he took a Nazirite vow, maybe that at least knocks out the obligation to bury the unattended corpse. All right, just explaining, that's where expanding it even to that kind of Nazir who's a Kohen Gadol. So, but we got one more term, la'achoto. The sister, Matalmud Lomar, Haresha Yako in Gadol ve Nazir veholech lishchot et pischo. It's a Kohen Gadol who took a Nazirite vow, who is on his way to slaughter his Pesach offering on the 14th of Nisan. And what will burying the body mean? It will be a violation of the Nazirite vow, a violation of his Kedusha as a Kohen, a violation of his super Kedusha as a Kohen Gadol, and foregoing a mitzvah whose penalty for failure to perform is karet. And you won't be able to get it back. Nonetheless, afilu achi, la'achotohu de'ino yitama, avamitamehu lemet mitzvah. All right, so the Midrash reads out the sort of limiting terms here, which seem like they're originally expanding terms, to reinforce that the mitzvah of meit mitzvah applies in every single possible situation, no matter how holy the person is, no matter how big a mitzvah they think they have on the line. Okay? Now, why is this relevant for us? Going back to here, this proves that kvurat meit mitzvah is docha avodah. Why? Because taken in fully, all of these midrashim are talking about, first of all, a kohen who's knocked out from potentially doing the avodah, but also lishchot et pischo, right? You're going to actually knock out a korban in order to bury an unattended body, which shows you that the obligation to bury an unattended body is more weighty than the avodah, all right? And that was piece one of what Reish Lakish wanted to prove, all right? So that just ends here. Hayah olech lishchot et pischo, v'shama shemeid lo meid, yacho yitama, amarta lo yitama, yacho keshem she'eno mitame la'achoto, kach eno mitame lemeit mitzvah, Talmud lomar, v'la achoto, la'achoto hu de'eno mitame, aval mitame lemeit mitzvah. All right, just following that through, there is this obligation. You're not allowed to defile yourself. You're not allowed to defile yourself even to your sister. But when it's someone that's not like your sister, that is to say someone without any relatives to take care of her, a meit mitzvah, then you have the obligation to do that. So that proves that meit mitzvah ranks above the avodah. And we know already that avodah ranks above Shabbat. So it should be logical to say that on Shabbat, if you pass an unattended corpse, you get out a shovel, start digging in the ground and bury it and violate all the prohibitions of Shabbat that would be involved because it's simply more important on Shabbat. Yeah, why wouldn't we be able to bury the body until after Shabbat? Well, in part to make a point, potentially, right? The idea would be this is to show how important this obligation is. Again, I'm not sure how much this is a real question for Reish Lakish, as much as he's trying to sort out, is it fundamentally more important? There is also in general a feeling that, okay, even if you're not allowed to bury your relative on Shabbat, because we don't think that burial in general supersedes Shabbat, we don't like that, right? One of the main reasons the calendar was arranged to not have Yom Kippur fall on Fridays and Sundays was to not have 2 days in a row where you can't bury people. Because the notion that you would wait even one day to bury someone before refrigeration and all those sorts of things, then you've got this sort of hierarchy, right, that's playing out where the regular burial is not going to supersede Shabbat, but you don't like it, right? So if it's meit mitzvah, if it's something that already is obligatory, maybe we'll say that that's what you need to do, all right? So that's Reish Lakish's argument, okay? Reish Lakish's argument is we should be able to get to almost, again, it's either an argument or a reductio ad absurdum. Seems to me I've made the case that you should be able to violate, maybe be obligated to violate Shabbat to bury an unattended corpse. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan is now going to shoot back. Amar le ritzicha tochia shedocha et ha'avodah ve'eina docha et ha'shabbat. So this is one of these arguments that I don't know what's wrong with your argument exactly, but I know it's wrong because I see other things that don't follow that pattern. Ritzicha, okay, murder, but here we mean dealing with murder, proves that you are wrong. We'll prove that that syllogism, that kal vachomer is a kal vachomer pircha. It is logically unsound. Why? Because ritzicha, murder, supersedes the temple service. Okay, so here, what are we talking about? Here we're referring to this tradition. V'chi yazid ish al re'ehu lehorgo ve'orma, me'im mizvechi tikachenu lamut. Again, a verse that on its plain surface meaning seems to allude to there being some notion that the altar, the mizbeach, is some kind of sanctuary, right? In the same way that we use that term today, that if you grab onto the mizbeach, you can be given some kind of amnesty, immunity, and that plays out in the story of Yoav when Shlomo is coming after him to kill him. And this verse is coming to say, even if the mizbeach provides some sanctuary, it doesn't do so for murderers, and you simply pull that person off the mizbeach and take them off to die. But it is read midrashically to be, me'im mizbechi, well, who's on the mizbeach? The kohen. if a Kohen is involved in bringing something to the Mizbeach, but the Kohen is then suspected of murder, you pull the Kohen off of his job in order to try him and execute him. All right? That shows the principle that ritzicha is docha avodah. We mean that in the sense of, again, dealing with a murderer, convicting a murderer, executing a murderer, supersedes. They can't say, well, I need that person to do their job on the Mizbeach. We'll talk about this as we go. I think there's some like interesting thoughts here about what we, when we tolerate certain things in the context of leadership, because they, you know, well, certain things have to get done kind of in the public space. When do we give people immunity from crimes, right, that they're performing while in office? This is very much related to that. The thrust here is, though, a Kohen is suspected of murder. He gets pulled off the job. Nonetheless, Ritzicha is not Dochai Tashaba. Now, what does that mean? Again, that doesn't mean murder doesn't supersede Shabbat, but dealing with murder doesn't supersede Shabbat. That is to say, an assumption Rabbi Yochanan is assuming here, that, but we know you don't execute people on Shabbat. We know you don't execute murderers on Shabbat. So there goes your syllogism, right? Like on the one hand, oh, if Ritzicha is A, and it's docha et avodah, which is B, and B is docha C, where C is Shabbat. So you would think A is docha C, but it's not true because we know C is docha A. So apparently we don't have a ladder here. We have some kind of circular loop, Escher, you know, staircase type situation here where there is no sort of top and bottom. And so therefore the logic doesn't necessarily play out, says Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? Would you capture a murderer on Shabbat? To the extent it was a public safety thing, sure. But the notion of running a trial, executing person, et cetera, that's the thing we're talking about being not done. All right, so yeah, you can't say that, Reish Lakish, because I showed you another case. Now the Gemara continues and says, well, wait a minute. Ritzicha gufa tidcha et ha-shabbat mikal v'chomer. I'm not so sure that's right. Why don't we say, actually, that dealing with murder should supersede Shabbat by a different kind of syllogism? Ma avodah shedocha et ha-shabbat, ritzicha docha ota, sheneemar me'imiz b'chitika chenu lamut, Shabbat shenidcheit mipnei avodah, eino din shetei ritzicha docha ota. So you may have done this logic already in your mind, right? If we know that the temple service supersedes Shabbat, and we know that Ritzicha supersedes it, so yeah, why not? In other words, I just gave you an explanation of, well, it must flow like in a circle in a non-hierarchical way, but the sugya wants to know, I don't know, that seems like pretty good hierarchical logic. Why is that not the case? Amar Rava. So Rava says, Kvar psaka tana deve Rabbi Ishmael. The reason is, we just already have a point of settled law where a tana from the school of Rabbi Ishmael already gave us a verdict on this, a very clear decision that Ritzicha is not docha Shabbat, that executions, criminal proceedings, etc., don't supersede Shabbat. And it's proved from a verse, which we'll get to right now. And therefore, you can't start a logic game with me as if it is open to get there. Like, we have a verse that anchors it, and therefore you'll have to go figure out why the logic doesn't work out, but you don't have free rein to simply make that conclusion from deductive moves alone. All right, now here's the case. The Tana Deve Rabbi Ishmael. What was the teaching? Lo tiva'aru esh ma Talmud lomar. Okay, so let's just jump here for a minute to understand what's happening and how this is going to get explained. So something very weird happens in the Torah when we talk about prohibitions on Shabbat. We have two kinds of idioms that the Torah uses about it. One which is maddeningly general and one which is confusingly specific. On the one hand, the Torah says things like, Sheshet yamim teyasem elacha, uvayom ha-shvi yeh lachem kodesh, shabbat shabbaton Hashem, kol ha-oseh vo melacha yumat. Don't do melacha on Shabbat. What is that? How is it defined? Nothing. Right? Just a general claim, don't do melacha. Then the very next verse, this is in Parshat Vayakel, is O tevaru esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha-shabbat. This very specific thing of don't use fire. Okay, so what? What is that? What is that very specific thing doing there? And how does it interact with the broad articulation? No one thinks that ish, that fire, is the only thing that counts as melacha. The Torah talks about a few other things, right? Becharishu v'katsir tishbot. But what is the, how are we to make sense of that? And there's a whole long passage in the Mechilta, which we're going to now just get a little snippet of, that's playing out different readings of that. So here, this Tana Devei Rabbi Ishmael, and again, it's basically, there's a fuller parallel in the Mechilta, the Midrash Halacha and Shmot. Lo tevaru esh, ma Talmud lomar. What is that phrase adding or clarifying? What was the point of saying Lo tevaru esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha-shabbat? And here the question is, the assumption is really, I already know that fire is some kind of melacha. I mean, it's counterintuitive because the verse is the thing that tells you that. But the assumption is, we already know there's 39 melachot, there's this long list. Of course, you're not allowed to use fire on Shabbat. Why does the Torah single out fire? Now, the Gemara then breaks in and gets agitated by this question. Ma Talmud lomar? What do you mean, ma Talmud lomar? We have full discussions about what that means. Ilu Rabbi Yosei, lelav yatzat. Either Rabbi Natan, lechalek yatzat. There's a debate between Rabbi Yose and Rabbi Natan as to why lo tevaru esh b'chol moshvotechem, why the melacha of havarat esh, the melacha of manipulating a fire, gets its own verse. Rabbi Yose thinks it's in order to clarify that it is a lav, that it is a negative commandment, and Rabbi Natan thinks it's in order to split things up. What does that mean? Kidetanya, as this Baraita indicates, Havara lelav yatzat, divrei Rabbi Yose, Rabbi Natan omer lechalek yatzat. What does that Baraita mean? So Rabbi Yose thought, the reason lo tevaru esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha-shabbat is separated out from every other kind of melacha and gets its own verse, is to show you that that is the least severe of all the melachot. Meaning every other melacha you get stoned for, or you get karet for. But this one is only a lav. This one is only a garden variety negative commandment for which you would get lashes. All right, so according to Rabbi Yose, building a bonfire on Shabbat, you would not bring a sin offering to the temple. It's just not serious enough. It's not at the level of karet or mitat beit. Whereas Rabbi Natan reads differently, the Torah picked one melacha almost at random, havarat esh, and listed it separately, lechalek, to be clear that every melacha has its own integrity. And therefore, if you did 39 different melachot on one Shabbat, you would bring 39 sacrifices. Don't think when it says lo ta'aseh kol melacha, it means any bundle of melacha kind of counts as one violation. They all have their integrity. Sewing is different from burning a fire, is different from baking, is different from building. All of them are sort of separate counts that you would be brought up on in court, as it were. What's the theory behind Rabbi Yose? I really think Rabbi Yose, in terms of why fire would only be alive, is really actually just reading. He's noting that when you talk about melacha generally, you have this language of mot yumat, right? And I think if you look at the previous verse, you see this, right? Kol ha'oseh vo melacha yumat. And then a verse that doesn't talk about death at all, just wags its finger. Lo tevaru esh v'chol moshvotechem. Rabbi Yose reads that and he's like, I guess Ish doesn't have the death penalty. That must be the point of that verse, right? So if you ask what's the deeper, how would he then in the backdrop against that reading, which is I think what's driving him, explain the svara or the idea? Not sure. It's an interesting thing to think about. It is a Mishnah that that clarifies that we divide up Melachot in this way, but according to Rabbi Natan, this is where it comes from, okay? And also, I think what's not totally clear is, did everyone at all time agree with that? Like, it is not actually clear from this Braita, I don't remember now if we have evidence of Rabbi Yose elsewhere weighing in on this, but from this Braita, it's not clear if Rabbi Yose holds that principle, right? That he gets that principle from somewhere else. All right, all of this is parenthetical. I warned you. A tough sugya. And I can't remember if I already put in the document, but if not, I'll put it next week, the sort of an outline that I've made up of it. But all of this is about Rava came in and said, oh, yeah, we know that the death penalty does not supersede Shabbat because of something Devei Rabbi Ishmael said. We started off saying that Devei Rabbi Ishmael asked, Lo Tavaruesh, Ma Talmud Lomar. And then we said, what do you mean, Ma Talmud Lomar? We have a very rich tradition with a machloket about what that verse is adding. So now we're going to clarify and sharpen what did Rava mean. Ela amar Rava, Tana moshavot kashyale, moshavot matalmud loma, mikedisha bat chovat agufi, vechovat aguf, noheged bein ba'aretz, bein bechutz la'aretz, moshavot dechatav rachman alamali. What's the question here? Not why is there a verse at all of Lo Tavaruesh b'chol moshvotechem. That we've got a bunch of traditions on. But what the Tana, Devei Rabbi Ishmael, was asking, they're clarifying in Rava's name, was why does it say Lo Tavaruesh b'chol moshvotechem? That's the unusual phrase. It should have just said, Lo tiva'aruesh ve'yom ha-shabbat. And in particular, the thing that's puzzling about that is generally in rabbinic midrashic reading, b'chol moshvotechem is meant to indicate that the mitzvah to which it is attached applies wherever you live, including in the diaspora. I don't care where you're living, the Torah says when it says b'chol moshvotechem, this mitzvah applies. And says the Gemara, says, right, Rava, in the name of this Tana, that was puzzling. Because there was no need to say b'chol moshvotechem. Moshavot matalmud lomar. Given that Shabbat is a chovat haguf, meaning the nature of Shabbat is it's something you observe with your body by refraining to do things, as opposed to chovat karka. It's not something that's about a piece of land. Right, when things are about a piece of land, like don't eat a fruit on a tree for 3 years, or don't work the land every 6 years. So that's the kind of thing where the Torah might need to clarify: is that something everywhere you're a farmer, or is that something that's a din in Eretz Yisrael? But here, where Shabbat is obviously a chovat aguf, and chovat aguf is noheget applies wherever you live, bein ba'aretz bein b'chutz la'aretz, moshavot achatav rachman alam ali. Completely superfluous for the Torah to have told me that I need, to have told me moshavot. I already knew that this was sort of geographically universal. So therefore we ask, what's the point of that? And now we'll get the answer. Mishum Rabbi Ishmael, Amar Talmid Echad. One student spoke up in the name of Rabbi Ishmael, quoting his teacher, and said, Lifi Shenemar, Ki yihyeh ve'ish cheit mishpat mavet ve'humat, shomea ani bein bechol, bein beshabbat. V'hama ani mekayem mechalale amot yumat, bishar melachot, chutz mimitat beitim. O, eino ela afilu mitat beitim. Uma ani mekayem ve'humat, bechol, aval lo beshabbat. O, eino afilu beshabbat, Talmud lomar, lo tevaruesh b'chol moshvotechem. Ulahalan Homer, Vahayu Ela Lachem Hukat Mishpat Dorotechem. בכל מושבותיכם. מה מושבות האמור להלן בית דין? אף מושבות האמור כאן בית דין. ואמר רחמנה, לא תבערו אש בכל מושבותיכם. Okay, let's follow the argument here. I just wanted you to feel the whole cadence of that, but we'll take it step by step. This is one of those classic Midrashei Halacha moves where you say X, you say X is the way to read it. And then you say, really, is it X? Maybe it's Y. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's X or it's Y. The verse comes in to clarify that indeed it's X. Okay, so what's the X here, the first possibility? There's a way of reading that pasuk which deals with executing someone. When a person has a sin that results in a death sentence and they are put to death, okay, plain sense there is then when someone's put to death, don't leave their body hanging on the tree overnight. But here it's read as sort of a directive. When someone has a death sentence, you have to execute them. And there's a way of reading that, which is the Midrash's first way of reading it, which is, when someone has a death sentence, your obligation is to execute them. I don't care what else you've got going on. Remember Inui Hadin, that concept we saw of not letting it sit overnight. Shomea ani bein bechol bein b'shabbat. I might conclude from that 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 means, even if it's Shabbat, you execute them. V'humat. V'hama ani makayem mechalalei amot yumat. And so how am I going to still maintain the notion that if you violate Shabbat, that's a serious death penalty offense itself? Like you're not supposed to do that? Yeah, observe Shabbat, don't do anything that violates Shabbat, except for court-ordered executions. Court-ordered executions are override Shabbat with vihumat. Oh, well, that's one way of thinking about it, or enoela afilu mitat beitin. Maybe actually mechalelea mot yumat should be read as mechalelea mot yumat. I don't care who is doing the violating. I don't care if it's a court that's executing a murderer. That's a violation of Shabbat. Don't do it. Umani makayem vehumat bechol avalo b'Shabbat. And I read that other verse as saying, yeah, and then you have to execute him. Of course, on the first available day to execute him, but not on Shabbat. Oh, I know, elafilu b'Shabbat. Or should I go the other way, right? In other words, so here the Midrash here is in a kind of hermeneutic stalemate. All right, it doesn't know which one to prefer. Talmud Lamar, lo tavaru esh b'chol moshvotechem. Here's what our verse comes to resolve. Do not burn fire. And it is being used here in the sense of sreifa. Okay, the execution for the form of execution that involves burning fire. Don't burn fire in all of your moshavot, which does not here mean chutz la'aretz. It means anywhere you are dwelling as a hyperlink to v'ayu eila lachem lechukat mishpat ledorotechem b'chol moshavotechem. In Bamidbar Lamed Hei, in Parshat Rotzeach, dealing with the Ir Miklat, the cities of refuge, the Torah concludes the whole section of procedure there by saying, this is how you handle intentional and unintentional murderers. This shall be your chukat mishpat, really your sort of fixed procedure, judicial procedure, for all generations, bechol moshvotechem, wherever you dwell. But the wherever you dwell there is obviously an instruction to a court, because that whole passage is about how courts are supposed to deal with murderers. Ma moshavot amur la'alan beit din, so just as the moshavotechem in Lamed Hei refers to a court, af moshavot amur kan beit din. So too, the moshavot in lo tavaru esh b'chol moshavotechem is actually an instruction to the court, hey court, don't use fire on Shabbat. And what does that mean? Don't execute people with fire on Shabbat. Why? Because you don't execute people on Shabbat. And therefore, right, Amar Rachmana, lo tavaru esh b'chol moshavotechem. Therefore, from this, what do we get to conclude? We get to conclude that Ritzicha is not Docha Shabbat. You cannot, dealing with a murderer does not override Shabbat. And even though the temple service does, and even though dealing with a murderer overrides the temple service, you just have this verse that overrides that potential hierarchy you might construct and makes a kind of puzzling infinite loop where each one of these is higher than the next one in line in a sort of, you know, you can imagine it as a kind of spatial paradox, okay? And therefore, Reish Lakish is shot down. Now, I'll pause here for a second if there's any comment on this. I just want to point out, hopefully by now, you now have a sense of why were we talking about this at all, right? We started out, yeah, excellent, rock, paper, scissors, exactly. We started out with this discussion just sort of out of nowhere. And here's a great place where every now and then Rashi comes in and just sort of gives you like Talmudic genre help, okay? He says here, I went back to the previous page, Reish Lakish lav amatnitin baya me Rabbi Yochanan ela be'alma. Reish Lakish was not asking Rabbi Yochanan a question that had anything to do with our Mishnah. Ela be'alma. This is just like a general discussion that happened out there. V'sidruha misadrei hagmara kan. The redactors of the Talmud arranged it here. Mishum de sofalishol utehe mitad beitin docha Shabbat, because the discussion eventually gets to a place where we're going to talk about whether executing someone supersedes Shabbat, which was indeed part of the topic of our previous. So that's just a, you know, an example of Rashi sometimes, you know, breaking that wall. And showing in an effective way what, you know, you get to just sort of take for granted when you learn the Talmud enough, but it's nice to have it pointed out, which is that there's all kinds of editorial decisions that are made here in order to arrange these discussions, even though on their own, they don't necessarily, you know, immediately, intuitively, and necessarily flow one into the other. Okay, got a couple questions in the chat. Also, welcome if you want to unmute and share something as well. Doesn't this mean that Ritzicha is the exception, but generally Reish Lakish's logic is sound? Well, to the extent you mean Reish Lakish's logic is sound, if A supersedes B and B supersedes C, then A supersedes C, thing coming in. I guess maybe you're asking back, Doche is in a transitive relation. I think the part that's then confusing is, right, does the verse then lead you to say, oh, so Doha just doesn't have transitivity? Or is it just to say, Doha sometimes doesn't have transitivity and you can't, you know, throw out a derivation from a verse because it doesn't fit the logical pattern you're expecting? Yeah, are we to assume the editors of the Talmud are the works of Midrash Halacha that we are using? Well, I would say it this way. They probably don't have the names of what we talk about, like the Sifrei and all of that, are names that come from the Talmud itself, so we're familiar with it from there. It's unlikely that they don't have like some redacted version of the Mechilta, like as a sequential text, the way that we do. But on the other hand, it's not like we're dealing with a totally different text. That is to say, you may have slightly different versions, or there may be some development of that text that we have in a collection, extra Talmudic collection, and what we see here, but it's clearly the same material. And that'll depend, that's a much bigger debate between various scholars of Talmud. There's like, you know, there was Albeck on one side and a number of other people who were like, well, every text you see is like its own thing and its own independent tradition. And then you have among more recent scholars, Shama Friedman, sort of very hard in the camp of, what are you talking about? These are all obviously the same thing. We have to view them as one of them is dependent on the other. But either way, you're not talking about a shared final redacted text like we've got, a book, as it were. But there's clearly some deep, deep interrelationship. Yeah, Jamie, and then just going back. seems like Rabbi Ishmael's interpretation of Moshavot would then be a third opinion. And Machloka, Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Nathan would limit the fire to a much more specific concept. So, good. That's what the Gemara is afraid of and deflects. That's why the Gemara is invested in saying that Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Nathan are really only commenting on why the verse is there at all. Whereas Rabbi Ishmael is jumping in with why bechol moshvotechem. When you go back to the Mechilta, I didn't bring it, maybe I'll bring it next time, but I was worried we would run out of time, which we definitely would have. In the Mechilta, I think your reading is a little more plausible, which is to say that it seems like there's a whole bunch of alternate accountings for that verse in its entirety. Here the Talmud is invested in saying, this is only on the bechol moshvotechem, because they want everyone to hold, to sort of be compatible with the Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Natan world. Yeah, reminding of the sugya, saving a person from collapsed building on Shabbat, worth having someone liable for the death penalty by saving someone or killing someone. Yeah, there's a lot of complication and interaction between the different pieces here, and I think that's right. Good, okay. So now let's see if we can round the bend till the end. Again, as I said, our real goal here is just to sort of get through the whole narrative arc. And next time, at least at the beginning, we'll do a little bit of taking apart some of the pieces and a couple Tosafot and other things to fill it out. All right, so we're going to continue here. And now it seems like we are going into a sort of further reductio ad absurdum here, but little unclear. So we're now at Abaye. Amar Abaye. Hashta de'amrat ein ritzicha dochat ha-shabbat. Ein ritzicha docha et avodah mikal v'chomer. Uma shabbat shenidchet mipnei avodah, ein ritzicha docha otah, avodah shi docha et ha-shabbat, ein odin shalot ein ritzicha docha otah. So Abaye, not really willing to throw in the towel on docha not being transitive, wants to say, well, fine, if you've got your anchor in that thing of Rabbi Ishmael, so I want to run the reaction in the other direction and say, fine, you've proven to me that Ritzicha does not supersede Shabbat. We don't execute people on Shabbat. But now I should be able to prove syllogistically that Ritzicha is not Docha et Avodah. Maybe actually a Kohen who is there to offer a sacrifice should not be pulled off that job. And Tosfot point out, by the way, that, you know, the sense in which this has bite and probably the sense in which it's meant is you pull him off the job, even if there's no one else available to do it for some reason, and therefore the korban would be lost, okay? So to say Ritzichat Zocha Avodah, you're prepared to say that by pulling this kohen off the job for the Ritzicha, yeah, this Avodah, this temple service will not happen. Says Abaye, maybe that's not right, right? And here it's very simple. If Shabbat is superseded by the Avodah, Ma Shabbat Shenidchet Mipnei Avodah, Ritzicha does not supersede it, well then Avodah, the temple service, which supersedes Shabbat, so certainly then, Ritzicha should not supersede it, right? So here we're just saying, Shabbat is B compared to A. Avodah sits on top of Shabbat, all right? And we know, right, Shabbat is A and Avodah is B. And Ritzicha, we know, is below Shabbat. So then I should be able to conclude, right, that the Ritzicha has to be C. It has to sit all the way at the bottom and it's even below Avodah. All right, so that's the argument. Now, Abaye is going to have to clean something up, which is Mei Mizbechi Tikachen Ulamut, because there is, it seems to be a verse there, but he feels he can narrow that verse down. El Ahadichti Mei Mizbechi Tikachen Ulamut Hahu LeKorban Yachid DeLo Dache Shabbat. That verse, which says Mei Mizbechi Tikachen Ulamut. You pry the Kohen away from the Avodah, even at the risk of losing the temple service, actually only refers to a Kohen who is dealing with an individual's sacrifice. An individual sacrifice is insufficiently important to stop executing the murderer Kohen was about to offer it. In that case, the Torah says, Me'im Mizbechi Kachenu Lamut. But we would not say, Me'im Mizbechi Tikachenu Lamut, Kedei Levatel Korban Tzibur, in order to nullify a public offering. And again, here's where the sort of policy piece that I said I think is sort of an interesting undercurrent in this sugya comes up. This is sort of Abaye playing with the notion of, I'm not convinced that at the moment when something needs to happen in the Beit HaMikdash for the public, when something is being done, as it were, by a key government official, that there shouldn't be immunity for that moment, right? The notion that basically, again, I understand, I think Stevie quoted earlier, I'm using the terms here a little loosely in the sense of, you know, what are we talking about? Starting a procedure, executing, et cetera, right? But thinking broadly, the notion that when someone is in office, they have immunity from certain proceedings that you will then be able to kick in once they're out of office. Abaye is playing with that concept here and saying, maybe the notion of Me'im Mizbechi Tikachenu Lamut, we have been reading it too broadly. And taking seriously Rabbi Ishmael's tradition, maybe we should say Me'im Mizbechi Tikachenu Lamut only applies to a Korban Yachid. Okay, so now Abaye, Rava is going to attack. Amar Rava. Yihachi, the base text says, someone's clearly, I didn't look who's saying to take it out. It's usually the Marshar or the Marshal. Amar Rava. Lo te'e ritzicha docha korban yachid mikal vachomer. No. You can't say that because I can prove to you from the same kind of kal vachomer, the same kind of syllogistic reasoning that you just used to get to your proof that the ritzicha, that ritzicha should not be docha avodat zibur, I can show you that ritzicha should not be docha korban yachid either. That the individual's korban should also be more important. How am I going to do that? Ma yom tov shenidche mipnei korban yachid ein ritzicha docha oto korban yachid shehu dochet yom tov ein odin shalot ei ritzicha docha oto. So Yom Tov is superseded by a Korban Yachid. At least the assumption here is, we'll come back to it in a minute, Yom Tov is superseded by a Korban Yachid, meaning what? You're allowed to bring voluntary offerings on Yom Tov. You show up, you've made the pilgrimage to the temple, the first day of Pesach, it's the only time you're going to be there, whatever it is. You also, you're allowed, that's your chance. You want to bring some of your voluntary offerings. So just as that's the rule on Yom Tov, you're allowed to do that. And nonetheless, Ritzicha is not Docha Yom Tov. That is to say, we don't, capital punishment is not allowed on Yom Tov either. Why? Because Yom Tov and Shabbat have the same rules, unless it relates to Ochal Nefesh, unless it relates to things that are involved in preparing food, the rules are the same. So once we know that you can't execute people on Shabbat, you can't execute people on Yom Tov, even though Yom Tov is less important than a Korban Yachid, so then certainly Korban Yachid, which is more important than Yom Tov, so obviously capital punishment cannot supersede that. All right, so why is that impossible? That's impossible because then the verse, Me'im Mizbechi Tikachenu Lamut, will have no application. But here Rava is really doing a reductio ad absurdum against Abaye. Can't be what you're saying, because basically it will self-liquidate. Okay, now the Gemara is going to jump in and say, Anicha leman de'amar, ein nedarim u'nedavot k'revim b'yom tov. Leman de'amar, nedarim u'nedavot k'revim b'yom tov, ma'ika le'memar. That was a nice move, Rava. It only works if you hold the side of the debate, nedarim and the, sorry, meaning, Anicha, you can get out of it, right? Here, let's look at Rashi. Rashi will help us here. Hanicha. Milte de Rava. Hanicha lamanda amar nedarim u'nedavot en krevim b'yom tov matzit le'okume me'im mizbechi b'korban yachid. You, Abaye, could, you know, weasel out of my argument if you held the position that you're not allowed to bring voluntary offerings. The villages of my builds won't work, right? Because then the Korban Yachid is not more important than Yom Tov. Dilo dache lo Shabbat lo Yom Tov. The Tulo Midrash Kal v'chomer Kedamran. El alamanda amar krevim. But if you hold that other position, Ika le Midrash Kal v'chomer Kedamran. Okay? You would be able to make the kind of kal vachomer that I made. Ulehahu tana heichi mokmat meimiz v'chi. Right? So the fullness of Rabba's argument is you have to have an option for everyone has to have a way of construing meimiz v'chi tikachenu lamut as authorizing the suspension of some avodah, because that's what we know rabbinically that means. You can play with the scope, but it cannot be a null. And therefore, says Rava, your whole kavachomer, your whole mode of thinking about it doesn't work, because I can just construct my own thing where the Korban Yachid is more important to, than Yom Tov for one earlier opinion, and you'll be left with no application of Me'im Mizbechi Tikachenu Lamut. So now Rava comes and answers this. That's correct. Me'im Mizbechi must refer to some case of a Kohen doing Avoda. Ela, Amar Rava. Okay. La mi baya lemande amarim o nedavot krevim beyom tov. Dahalo mitkaya Me'im Mizbechi kla. Rava says, it's game, set, match already, as I've showed you, on anyone who thinks that you're allowed to bring voluntary offerings on Yom Tov. Because if you think you're allowed to bring voluntary offerings on Yom Tov, then voluntary offerings trump Yom Tov. Yom Tov trumps Ritzicha. And therefore, right, even a Korban Yachid trumps Ritzicha. And you'll have no application whatsoever for the verse, Me'im Mizbechi, that applies to pulling a Kohen off his job during the Avodah. So that's fine, I took care of that. Ela afilu leman de'amar nedarim u'nedavot ein krevim b'yom tov. But I'm gonna go further and tell you, even according to the other view, where technically you cannot say that a Korban Yachid supersedes Yom Tov, because you're not allowed to bring voluntary offerings, nonetheless you have a problem. Why? Haktiv me'im mizbechi. The verse says me'im mizbechi. It doesn't say me'im hamizbeach. It says my mizbeach. Me'im mizbechi. Mizbechi hamiyuchadli. My mizbeach with a thing that is dedicated for me. Umayninhu tamid. What are we talking about in that verse? The Korban Tamid, Ani Lachmi Le'ishai, right? When you say Me'im Mizbechi, it doesn't just mean like an altar. It means the Mizbeach being used for my daily bread, Kivyachol, right? God speaking. And therefore the verse read carefully is obviously talking about a Korban Tzibur, about a public offering. The Amar Rachmana, Me'im Mizbechi, Tikachenu Lamut. And nonetheless, the Torah said, when do you take the person to die? When do you interrupt the avodah in order to execute them for a capital crime? Me'im mizbechi, even when they're working on the tamid offer. And therefore, you have no way out. This is sort of a much simpler reading at the end. You have no way out of the fact that the Torah has grounded ritzicha docha avodah broadly, even for things that, and so this is sort of shooting down the argument that, again, using my analog, that there's sort of immunity while in office when you're working on something very public, all right? That doesn't matter. Even the most public responsibility is superseded. Okay? That's the end of the sugya. We made it to the end of that arc. Again, it started with Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, and it played through, right? The fundamental structure of this is different kal vachomers. Now, I think at the end, I'm happy to hear some comments This one may be a little more for the mathematicians and the logicians than the lawyers this week. I don't know. At the end, I think Rava really is settling into a notion of, at least in this context, but maybe more broadly, there really is no transitivity to the dechiyot here. That is to say, we have two firm principles that are laid out by the Torah. One is, Ritzicha is docha avodah broadly, and Ritzicha is not docha Shabbat broadly, right? Both of those are held, and they don't sit nicely with avodah being docha Shabbat, right? They just don't work well. Now, there's all kinds of ways you can think about stuff like this. You know, one is sort of just sort of as an internal closed system. And here, if people have thoughts from, you know, logic or math that are sort of helpful for ways in which axioms may or may not interact in these kinds of ways, and what kinds of, logic chains you can or can't assume to create, that's one way of sort of thinking about how this plays out. You know, there's a different way of saying, well, the Gemara is actually trying to put together things that don't fit together so well, right? A certain kind of historical mind might say that the Mikdash in certain ways is like preserving another vision of Shabbat, right? In other words, our later discourse around what goes on in the Mikdash is, oh, it's Docha Shabbat, right? From a different perspective, this certainly happens with like rabbinic stuff all the time. When you say, Ein Shvut BaMikdash, it's almost sort of like, right, when it comes to like rabbinic law, it's like, well, the temple's older than rabbinic law. So there are things that went on there. And when you talk about the vagueness of what counts as melacha, right, in a certain way, right, it's not the rabbinic way of reading the Torah, but you could go back and read the Torah and be like, well, from the fact that the Torah tells me to offer two kvasim, I learned that shchita and havarat eish are not apparently forbidden on Shabbat, because the Torah has commanded me to do them in the holiest place on earth. So some of what, you know, may come with these kal vachomers is actually the Torah is holding some multiple competing truths together in a certain way. And then when you want to apply a logical, mathematical, hierarchical frame to them, which presumes everything operating under the same rules, you get some of sort of the clash here. Yeah, any comments? I know we have a couple mathematicians here, I see from some of the, you know, the comments and some people I know. I don't know if any of you wanna, either Sherry or Adam, if you wanna say another sentence on your comments.
My instinct is to say that, okay, you know, if docha is not a transitive relation, which it doesn't have to be, right? Like, as in fact, my dad pointed out with the rocks, paper, scissors, there's the great example of something that's not an order, right? But then if I were to see a student try to deduce something from transitivity of something that wasn't transitive, I would take points off. And isn't that how the sugya started? In the Kvora, in the Meit Mitzvah thing, like, suddenly that to me is an open question again.
Right. So I think that's a very interesting question, which is, I'm thinking sort of from the redactional level also, like, who's holding what assumptions about how Dechiyah works? And of course, reading the Sugya itself as a unified whole is one question, as opposed to keeping Rashi's question in mind about why was this redacted here and for what reason? Is there a later frame? Is there another assumption? Does the Tana Devei Rabbi Ishmael assume those principles of Dechiyah in that way? That might be another angle. Sherry, did you have something to add from what you chatted in?
No, I was going to give an example, you know, of a non-transitive relation. The problem is that we often think that it's like logical syllogism, that in fact it's always going to be transitive.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be.
Right.
The classic example is tournament play. If A was a player who defeated B and B defeated player C, that doesn't mean that A defeated player C because he may not have played player C.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's great. Right. And the rock, scissors, paper is right. Rock, scissors, paper. Sort of taking that also to sort of like physical qualities, right? The ways in which the same way players have different strengths that interact with each other and weaknesses in different ways, so too different kinds of physical properties, right, can potentially do that. Right. And then there's, of course, as you know, both Professor Kaplan and Stevie have pointed out, you know, Kava homers are blown up all the time. The most of the time they're blown up is you say, well, you think A is more chamur than B, but actually that's only looking at one dimension of it. Looking at another dimension, B is more chamur than A, which is just within the dyad itself. So obviously that allows for the possibility here that that's what's playing out. On some level, back at the beginning, right, Rabbi Yochanan himself, I think, is sort of aware of that. And when I took us through that piece, I tried to render it as such, where he's like, I don't know what's wrong with your argument. I just know it's wrong. And on some level, I think we could implicitly add to that. And I know that it sometimes works that way, right? That these things can't be sort of, you know, simply reduced to a one-dimensional linear hierarchy. Instead, we're talking about complex bodies here with different components to them that then interact in different ways. And in that sense, it's not necessarily like a shocking or a radical idea, though I do think at least on the literary plane with the sugya, there's something amazing about the way it sort of takes us around and around with that and ends up, I don't know, is it back at the beginning? Is it, you know, where we thought we were, et cetera?
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
So if I'm seeing the sugya correctly, it's not that the syllogisms don't make sense, because they do make sense, but they're essentially overridden by gzeirat hakatuv. So the Torah text trumps logical deduction.
Good. I mean, that I think is the other way of reading that, right? Which is one of the ways, at least when I was narrating it, I did it sort of along the way. And that was a few of the comments, which is, oh, so does that just mean this is the exception, right? But otherwise, that the rule is it is, right? Dichia should work this way if we don't have a pasuk. Yeah, that requires, I think, further investigation. This is a kind of sugya I think would be very interesting. This is the kind of research that is the hardest to do unless you are like, you know, complete baki in the entire Gemara, the sort of form critical, the form critical parallels analysis, to look at how many other sugyot, because it's not by topic, it's not by term, potentially go through different versions of this kind of question of verses and hierarchy and three categories and how they interact, and then maybe get some broader view of what's going on the top. All right, good. Thanks for hanging in there for this more complex than usual sugya. I promise at the beginning of next time we'll do just a little bit of like a graphic, you know, take two on looking at what this looks like at the page a little more highlighted, and then we can offer some final reflections and thoughts, a few things in Tosfot I think are interesting before we move on to the next one. All right, a pleasure as always. See you next week.